T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN.
Our final hour together, and then you're done with me at least for a few days. Take it right up until 2 o'clock. JR coming up then. Pete Hoffman doing a fine job back in Manhattan. Tonight, we have a tremendous, tremendous baseball night. We got a game 6 between the Atlanta Braves and the LA Dodgers. That was extended last night because, you know, Mookie Betts is just brilliant at baseball. I mean, if you have a player like Mookie Betts, what you do is you keep him forever. That would be my thought. And then, obviously, Will Smith with the huge hit against Will Smith. But better than that, we have a Game 7 in the ALCS as the Houston Astros, of all teams, try to come back from being 3-0 down. And joining us right now, one of the preeminent baseball minds out there. You see him on Twitter. You see him everywhere. He's got that Morning Wood video he puts out. And that is the great Jared Carrabas. Jared, how you been?
Evan, I really didn't appreciate that comment that you just made about Mookie Betts. I really didn't appreciate that.
But you,
we're off to a bad start.
Wouldn't you agree with that comment? I mean, when you have a
Sure. I would agree. I would agree with the comment. I don't agree with the timing of it. I feel like it's, you know, it's a little lowbrow for you.
Well, let me ask you this. Take your, because you're so impartial, obviously. Take the impartial hat off for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to you, the Red Sox fan.
Okay.
You came back from 3-0 down, okay? Yep. It is a moment that is it's scar tissue here in New York, as you can imagine, for Yankee fans, and it has to be, for you, maybe the greatest moment, all right? I maybe winning the World Series a week later, but you came back from 3-0 down.
Yep.
Is there a part of you that doesn't want to see it happen again because you want to be the only one to have experienced it?
Of course, of course. It's like when the Dolphins got all excited when the Patriots lost to the Giants. It was... You know, I think when you, I don't think it takes away from that moment because, you know, it was Red Sox Yankees. The Yankees were a far better team than the Tampa Bay Rays are this year. It was a full season, so you grind after 162 and then the postseason. So there is an abbreviated season element to it. And also, I think, you know, it's the Houston Astros that are doing it. And you would imagine that. Under normal circumstances, 60 or 162, that the Astros don't make the playoffs. If it isn't for the pandemic, they don't even have the expanded postseason. The Astros have a losing record, and you know who knows what happens if they play the full 162, what their record would look like. But I mean, they were lifeless all year. They, to their credit, they flipped the switch once the playoffs started. But I watched that team every single night. And they were lifeless. They were boring. There was nothing exciting about them. They had no standout performances. It was nothing. And Carlos Correa had a good year, but that's about it. I mean, they were very blah, very meh. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that if the Astros do win tonight, it doesn't do it for me. Like if you go back and you watch like the documentary Four Nights in October, like there's drama and there's buildup and there's different backstories and all these different elements. If the Astros win tonight, what's the drama?
Like, what's the drama? Like, well, hold on. Now, let me agree with you on one thing, which is 04 was epic. I mean, not just because of the curse, but that was a huge element to it. But the star power that was involved. And we were talking about legendary guys in the history of this game and the way everything went about. I mean, you guys had the great comebacks in Game 4 and Game 5, the bloody sock, A-Rod hitting Bronson Arroyo's glove. I mean, it had everything. With that said,
This has the Astros as the ultimate heels. They are the best. Everybody hates the Astros, and they're going to pull off the 3-0 comeback? That's not a sexy enough storyline to you?
No, that's a storyline, but I'm talking about what you just mentioned, like all those things with inside the series. Like when I mentioned Four Nights in October, it is a minute-by-minute tale of an epic, whereas this would kind of just be like, well, the Astros cheated, everyone hated them, and then they used that as motivation in the playoffs to beat two teams, go down 0-3, and then they summoned the spirit of the 2004 Red Sox to come back against the Tampa Bay Rays, which the Tampa Bay Rays aren't exactly...
Oh, well, hold on. Just because you lower your tone doesn't make it, like, boring. You know what I mean?
It
like,
is boring.
It's boring.
It's not. It's boring. Have you been captivated by these baseball
games?
Like, yeah. Have you been locked into these baseball games the same way that you were locked in 2004? It's not even close.
No. I'm not... Look, I'll say it again. 2004 is epic. It's never going to be matched. I'm saying that this is still captivating. Like, this is still...
It didn't get captivating until last night. Because even when they won in game four, it's like, all right, well, you're delaying the inevitable. And then after game five, it's like, yeah, well, you know, it's a little bit too late with the effort here, guys. Then they win game six, the fourth game seven. It's like, oh, okay, you have my attention. So going into game seven is the first time that this series has really had my attention. Like, that you can't compare that to 2004.
Well, I think that there's a few elements that I do agree with you about. The Yankees-Red Sox had this incredible rivalry. And you just go back to even the year before. I mean, they had a classic seven-game series the year before, and it felt like a continuation of this great rivalry. Now, while the Astros and Rays played last year, it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel like
it's
a continuation.
You don't even remember that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But to me, as this series has gone on, like anytime a team is down 3-0, we just were under the assumption, well, this is over. When they won game four, I'm like, oh, okay. When they won game five, I got to tell you, Joe and I were talking about it yesterday, like, hey, maybe we have something here. So my interest started to peak once we got to even going into last night, my interest started to peak because there is something incredible about even forcing a game six because even that is so rare.
Yeah, going into game six, because it's the Astros and because, like, there's just something about them where, I don't know, they're built to do something like this. Not, like, from a roster standpoint, just from a pedigree standpoint, you're like, well, this team has been there, done that. They've been to the ALCS 4 years in a row. And just because the baseball gods do have a sense of humor, it would make sense if everyone was like, oh, really? We're going to get Rays Braves in the World Series when we could have had a rematch of Astros-Dodgers, and then they go down 0-3, and then the Dodgers go down 0-2 or 3-1 even, and then we still get Astros-Dodgers anyway. Because that's been the only way to really build drama is, like, create this fake adversity because no one cares. No one cares if the Astros are down 0-3. Like, no one's like, well, it would be interesting to see them come back. Like, no, everyone's like, I want to see them lose in four. Or I want to see them come back, force a game seven only to just lose, which is what everyone thought was going to happen to the Red Sox. Because at that point, there had never been a team to force a game seven after being down 0-3. So how do you top the Aaron Boone home run in 0-3? Oh, well, you become the first team in baseball history to come back from being down 3 only to then lose once again in game 7 to the Yankees.
Right. Well, what's funny about 04 is that, and this has changed so completely, which I'm sure you've enjoyed, the Red Sox were the favorites of everybody who wasn't a Yankee fan. Like, the Red Sox were America's team. They were the little engine that could, in a way, because of the curse. Like, they can never get past the Yankees. The moment the Red Sox beat the Yankees and then beat the Cardinals, they became, you know, they became heels, too. They became like the Yankees. And the Red Sox are not likable. Nobody likes the Red Sox outside of Red Sox fans. Let's be honest. But they were the little engine that could in their comeback. The Astros are the heels during the comeback. They are the bad guy trying to make the comeback. It would be like if the Yankees were trying to come back from 3-0 down against you guys in 2004. That's an interesting element to this whole thing in my mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, and obviously as a wrestling fan, I can appreciate the heel aspect to it. And I've even said that, you know, I think I tweeted this 2 months ago when the Astros, when it looked like it was almost laughable, the idea that they would make it to the World Series. I said that it is good for baseball for the Astros to be good because
you look at
what happened in February. I mean, we were down in Miami for the Super Bowl and everyone's talking about baseball because the Astros cheating scandal. And you had all these other things going on with, like the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs, but everyone was talking about baseball because Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a grand slam swinging on a 3-0 pitch with a 9-run lead or whatever it was.
Right.
So storylines in baseball are very, very important. And I think if the Astros are in the World Series again, that's a huge storyline. But they can't. That's the thing is, like, it's, if it's WrestleMania, if that's the comparison here, Vince McMahon needs to send the crowd home happy at the end of the night. He can't have the Astros win the title in the main event. He can't do that.
No, I get you. You're right.
Ah, come on.
You're right. No, you're right about that. And it would make sense if it's the Dodgers. Not that the Dodgers are America's
team. Has to
team,
be the Dodgers.
They're the revenge. They're the revenge from 2017. By the way,
I don't know how you feel about this with the whole Clayton Kershaw postseason thing, but I've been banging this drum for a while. That Clayton Kershaw is not bad in the postseason. He's just inconsistent.
Oh, I mean, dude,
bro. He's had a lot of very good starts in the postseason, and there is nobody on planet Earth who has a stronger case to hate the Astros openly than Kershaw. Because you go back to 2017, and he started game one, dominant. Game four, gets knocked around because he was in Houston. The Astros were cheating in Houston. Then in L.A., he comes out of the bullpen in game seven, and dominate.
And everyone forgets that because they lost. Yes. Everyone forgets that.
Exactly. So if the Dodgers in that one game that they rocked him where they were stealing signs, if that goes the other way, you have Clayton Kershaw, World Series champion, probably World Series MVP, and no one ever talks about his postseason ever again. And why don't people talk about a guy like, I don't know, CC Sabathia? He's got the same postseason ERA. Clayton Kershaw, what about Justin Verlander? He's 0-6. He's 0-6 in the World
Series.
No one talks about him because he's got the ring.
Well, look, first of all, I completely agree with you. And I've been saying that for years, too, because Kershaw has these brilliant postseason moments. I remember it against my team. You know, it's forgotten about, but in Game 4 of the 2015 NLDS, he came back on short rest and pitched 7 innings and allowed 1 run in a must-win game.
Right.
What are we're going to ignore that? I mean, the guy was brilliant.
He's got 8 shutout innings in this postseason.
No, you're right. You're right. Let's forget 8 scoreless, 13 strikeouts against the Brewers. I know it was this kind of fugazi first round, but it's still the playoffs. I agree. Now, the reason for it, and you hit on it, is CC Sabathia and Justin Verlander. Well, CC Sabathia had very big moments in leading, clearly being the leader of a Yankee rotation that won the World Series in 09, where he's coming on short rest. But winning a championship changes things. And you're right. If they would have won Game 7 against the Astros in 17, there's a different thought on him. And here's the other thing. With all due respect to Verlander and CeCe, who both are going to probably end up in the Hall of Fame, they're not Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw is one of the greatest pitchers of our generation. As good as those other two guys are, they're not Clayton, and kind of like Greg Maddux back in the day, they're held to a higher standard.
Yeah, I think the case is close with Verlander. Like, if you look at those numbers, I think it's like a 1A, 1B type situation. But winning a World Series is the end-all, be-all. Especially because, I mean, Verlander was not a World Series MVP. But if the Dodgers win that World Series in 2017... think about how much that changes the course of baseball history.
You don't
have this literal annual narrative that Clayton Kershaw can't get it done the postseason. And are people really as mad at the Astros if they don't actually go on to win the World Series?
No, they're not.
No.
They're not. No, question about it. It's winning the championship that changes everything. That's all it's...
That's why no one digs into the Yankees cheating, because they didn't actually win anything.
Again. Here we go.
Well, true. You said it. I mean, you're
well, what did I say? I said what? What did I say about the Yankees cheating? The Yankees didn't cheat.
You said it matters that the Astros won a World Series, and that's why people care about the cheating, whereas the Yankees have cheated, and no one cares because
What have the Yankees done to cheat?
Open the letter.
Well, look, I agree with you about opening the letter to find out, but what do you think you're going to find in that letter? Do you think you're going to find some magic that's going to, you know, make you tell the world the Yankees are clear cheaters? Like, that's going to be the evidence of it? Do you think that letter has that? Because I don't think it does.
I don't need the letter. I know they cheated. It's fine. It's fine. I mean,
okay, you don't need the letter. Exactly. I don't need to see the letter. In all seriousness now, all right? Because you got to be fair here.
Of course.
What should the Yankees do this offseason? Because they have lost to the better team 4 years in a row, as far as I'm concerned. So how do they get better? How do they become the team that does finally win a championship, what would you do if you cash?
You're going to have to get creative because you've got four key free agents. You've got, obviously, DJ LeMahieu, who I don't have going anywhere. You have Masahiro Tanaka, who would be nice to come back, but I don't think that he's going to come back. I think that another team will value him a little bit more and pay him more than the Yankees are willing to. Paxton, thanks for coming out. And then State Trooper Gardner, I feel like that's a guy that you can make him any offer and he's going to take it. That guy is either going to retire or play for the Yankees. You make the choice, Brian Cashman. But you need to, like, those are four guys that are free agents that you need to bring back just to get, just to be as good as you were the year before. And the year before, you weren't even as good to get back to the ALCS. So that's why you need to get creative in the sense that maybe it's a Marcus Stroman. Like, maybe it's a Marcus Stroman because I don't see Bauer going to the Yankees. Like, I don't, like, I really do think that he's a man motivated by chaos. He wants to start every fourth day. The Yankees right. probably won't let him do that.
Right.
He's going to want to keep running momentum inside of a clubhouse. The Yankees won't let him do that. And I think the whole Garrett Cole narrative is overblown. I do think that they can coexist on the same.
Well, let me ask you. Let me ask you because it seems like you and Trevor are boys. You know, you and guys are pals. You know, you were playing rock, paper, scissor during the quarantine, which I actually found very entertaining. Everybody did. I mean, I wasn't the only one. Have you talked to Trevor about this? Has he revealed to you his intentions in free agency?
We talk often. We probably talk a few times a week, and I have a general sense for what boxes he's looking to check. I don't even think that today Trevor Bauer knows where he wants to sign, but we've had conversations before about content, marketing, things like that, and our brains are very similar. And I don't know if that's a compliment to me. I don't think it is, to be honest. But our brains are very similar. And if I were him, I think where I would go is a very much a no-brainer decision. I think
it's clearly the New York Mets. Clearly,
no, I want a chance to win, so I would probably go to the San Diego Padres because you have to think about who Trevor Bauer is and what he's trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, he wants to win a World Series. Can you do that in San Diego? Yes, you can.
Yep.
He wants to market himself. Is that a market where, I mean, it's not L.A., but you're putting yourself around other stars. So you walk in that door, and you've got Fernando Tatis Jr. as a teammate. Sign me up. Comfortability. You walk in that door the first day. Who's there? Oh, one of my best friends in the world, Mike Clevenger. He's over there. And if you're trying to actually grow and promote momentum as a baseball content brand, you have guys like Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Eric Hosmer, Mike Clevenger, all these guys directly at your disposal for the entire season. That's checking a box. And also another one, what about Florida versus Arizona spring training? Like, he goes and he rented out an entire house, the Momentum House, at spring training last year. And when you're in Arizona, if you're a baseball fan that's never done spring training in Arizona before, it's fantastic. Everything is super close together.
Yep,
in Florida,
that.
When we do that tour, you end up driving 40 minutes to an hour to 2 hours to sometimes 3 hours to the next town.
I know full well that. Yep.
But in Arizona, I mean, the furthest you're going to drive is maybe 30 minutes. Everything else is it's all right next to each other. It's all in the same area. So if he's trying to put together a bunch of content in spring training like he's done in the past few years, I don't know that I'm overly enthused about signing with a team that goes to spring training in Florida. But if that team wants to put a four in front of his number, be like, hey, 1 year, $40 million, I do think that...
Is he going to do that? Because I remember he talked about that in years past. He's only going to sign one-year deals. Is that what he's going to do this offseason?
I don't think he's married to it. He's married to it. I think he'll explore all options. And if I am a smart baseball team right now, I kind of lay out 4 to 5 different offers. I'm like, hey, we'll give you a 1 year deal at this. We'll give you a 2 year deal at that. 3 year deal at this. Like, that's what's going to kind of trigger his brain into considering your team.
Look, I think the Padres are, I agree with you, a perfect place for him. With that said, San Diego is not New York City. And the opportunities in the greatest city in the world playing for a billionaire owner. Because I get you Met dig, but that's a dig from when the Wilpons owned the team. You know, with a lot of interesting stars and some big personalities on this team. Pete Alonso's got a big personality. Dom Smith's got a big belly too, doesn't he? Oh, wow. That's what you're going to do? You're going to go after Pete's belly? He's in fine
shape. I'm just saying.
He's a specimen.
They crowned him the king of New York perhaps a little bit too soon.
Well, look, he didn't have the greatest year this year. I admit that. But it was also, it was a weird year. What can I tell you? It was a weird season.
It was a weird year, and a lot of very good players had down years. I will give him a one-year buffer, but I need him to be the king of New York in 2021
Will it bother your buddy if he has to join a Met rotation where he's clearly not the best pitcher? I mean, I'm sorry. Like, reality-wise, he is next to the best pitcher in the world in Jacob DeGrom.
No, I don't think that matters to him.
Oh, good.
You know, I think in Cincinnati, when he first got there, even when this season started, because he was not very good. He wasn't very good last year when he got traded to Cincinnati. You start that season, and it's like Trevor Bauer, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, to his credit, has been awesome since he left New York. There was no clear-cut ace of that staff.
No, you're right. San Diego is a good place for him to go. If the Mets and the new owner is going to spend a lot of money, that's my one free agent signing. That's the one guy I would go all out for is Trevor Bauer, to put him in that rotation behind Jake. But we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen this offseason.
I would be very, very surprised if the Mets emerged as major players for Trevor Bauer.
I don't like this. I don't know. It's like you know something that you're leaving back. Does Trevor hate the Mets or something? Does he hate New York? Is that it? He hates New York.
I don't think he hates New York. He came to New York to come on starting nine around last year. He did a little.
Yeah, but just because you gave yourself a plug for the podcast that you do, which is a good podcast.
It's a great podcast.
It's a great podcast. No, listen, I like your work, man. That's why I put you on. I like it. I'm a fan of yours.
Yeah, thank you.
But that doesn't mean he likes New York because he went on your dopey podcast in New York once.
I thought you said you liked it. Now
I do like it. Dope is it?
Evan, can you be consistent?
Dopey is a word of affection from where I come from, okay?
Okay. Not where I come from.
I can imagine. Now, one last thing. What's going to happen tonight? I mean, are the Tampa Bay Rays going to hold this off? Are the Astros going to pull it off? What happens tonight?
Wow. I mean, Lance McCullers has had struggles keeping the ball in the yard, but still was pretty dominant with the strikeouts his last time out, and then Charlie Morton has also been very, very, very good in his own right. But, I mean, once you get to a game seven, everyone has seen everyone. Like, there's really no, like, clear-cut advantages by that point. We saw it with the bullpen, with when they go to Castillo, and it's like, yeah, he's dominant, but we've already seen this guy so many times in series. And base hit. It pains me to say this, but I think the Astros probably have the edge tonight. I think the Astros have the edge. I do. I believe in momentum, especially. How could I not in a seven-game series? I don't believe in momentum, you know, series to series in the course of the regular season. You're only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. But in a best-of-seven series, when you've got what you've got going up against what they have, I do believe in momentum. And I feel like the Astros, after the sixth inning yesterday, they knew that the series was over.
Well, we'll see. I'm rooting for the Astros, but I actually disagree. I think the Rays are going to pull it off tonight. Why am I rooting for the Astros?
Yeah.
I've got a myriad of reasons. Let's start with, A, I like the heel. I mean, as a wrestling fan like yourself, I kind of enjoy that badass nature to them. Number two, and this one I've kind of fleshed out on the air. I've thought about it, and I think it's true. I really don't like the Tampa Bay Rays. I look at them as the face of what's wrong with the game of baseball. I look at them as the ones behind the opener, which I don't love. I look at them as the face behind a sport that is my favorite, just like you, we share that, but has contributed, not unfairly, they're doing what they have to do, but they've contributed to aspects of this game that I don't love. And so when I see their logo and I see Kevin Cash's face, I think of that. I think of the things in baseball that they've brought to it that I don't love. And that has caused me to just not like the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah. I guess I'm more just like the way that I establish a rooting interest, because again, I like all 30 teams equally. It's not about the names and the numbers on the roster. It's about, honestly, how I'm treated by their fan bases. And Houston Astros fans have not really been nice. So if I were forced, gun to my head, you have to pick a team to root for, I don't think it would be the Astros.
Jared, what Rays fans are there? I mean, Rays fans treat you in what way since, like, there's seven of them?
Like a god. I mean, they might have a parade for me if the Rays end up going to the World Series. I mean, if I choose to have a starting nine live show at Tropicana Field, I mean, the place is going to be banging. That might be the highest attendance they draw next year.
That may be the case. Jared, I always appreciate it. Enjoy the baseball tonight. It should be fun.
Thank you so much. And honestly, Trevor Bauer to the Mets doesn't sound like the worst idea in the world. I mean,
thank you.
I'm pulling for you.
Text them right now and say, you know what? The Mets are a good idea. I believe you have power and influence. Now use it.
I will do that. I'll do that just for you.
Thank you, Jared. Jared Carrabas. And now, if Trevor Bauer signs with the Mets, he can always hold that over me and any other Met fan. He'll be like, yeah, I did it for you. Remember that day I texted him on a Saturday afternoon? I said, hey, Trev, what about the Mets? What about Flushing? What do you think of that? He's quite a character, but you can follow him on Twitter, and he does do a very good podcast. He's a good baseball fan. Knows his stuff, even though he's, you know the deal. I don't have to say anymore. You know the deal. We'll come back and get to your calls the rest of the way. 877-337-6666. JR is coming up at 2 o'clock. I'm here until then. So hang out. Pull up a chair. I'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.